I'm surprised Roger didn't suggest that he would rather be in children's worship today. But he had asked a couple, has it been a month or two? He said, just don't sell me out on our past. Today's the day. I'd learned about a week ago, I was reminded rather, because I'd forgotten this part, but the first part of it was, when I was a junior, I grew up going to Pennsylvania Christian Camp, PCC, up in Blue Knob, and he's thinking, oh, well, here we go. I had my sights on Kathy, and the year before, I held her hand. Oh, man, she was birdie, you know, and the next year, I thought, and me and my friends, we always said, who's the girl you're going with this year? You know, and I said, oh, it's Kathy. And she came walking down the road from the canteen area, and she's got somebody else's hand in hers. And it's Rogers. Who's this guy? I never saw him before, you know. And, oh, he's from Lebanon or someplace. Like, those people never come here. You know, they don't belong. I don't know how the rest of the week went for you, how long that was lasted. Sorry, I hope you knew about that. I hate to tell you, there's more. So, you know, huh? we graduate, you know, you go to college. I went to the Air Force, and there was a girl at home that I was keen on. We were pretty serious for a long time. Our parents had us figured out, you know, and then she goes to school, and things didn't work out so well. I learned that she's dating this guy down. She was in OVU. Did you go to OVC?
No.
Oh, how in the world did you get... So, how this happened, I don't know. But I learned that she's pretty serious with this guy down there in college. Was it Oklahoma?
No.
Oh, okay. Guess what his name was?
Roger.
I didn't put the two together then until just about a week or so ago. My wife talked to Colleen, and she said, oh, yeah, I know Roger. We used to date up there. I thought, that's the guy! That's it! So the truth is out. You're done sold, man. But I think we both made excellent choices when it come to the end. And I told Pam, I said, you better stay home. So Roger's going to be there. But there's an event in Ephrata today that we decided it'd be better if she stayed there. But it's great to be here. I like being. And I was thinking about this during taking the Lord's Supper that, you know, I've got family here. Even though we don't know each other really well, I got a string hanging me up here. You know, I believe that the Lord's Supper is as horizontal as much as it is vertical. And so I tend to want to look around and see who my family is that I'm eating with, that we're fellowshipping together. And I feel that special here. And so it's a pleasure to be here with you guys. I do want to talk a little bit about PCC. Not that I'm going to sell y'all this great experience or anything, but the last couple of years, I've had quite a grand opportunity to be a teacher up there for 6 years. It was good to come home, so to speak, and be with the kids. And I was in senior week all those years, and was able to teach, and the experiences were just phenomenal, you know, from the teacher's perspective, to have these kids and being able to share with them some, hopefully some enlightenment that they were able to have revealed to them. I developed relationships with these guys, and so whenever it come time for, it was interesting too, this one particular group were graduating during my last year that I was there and teaching. And Alex gave me permission to tell you this story. He came to me midweek, or it was probably Monday. We usually start Saturday afternoon, and so Sunday goes through, and then Monday. And I could tell Alex wasn't all there. Like, he was kind of troubled by something. He wasn't his usual self. And he always hung out with two other brothers, one in particular. There was just some reservation about his spirit, if you will. And eventually that afternoon he came up to me and he says, "Can I talk? Can we talk to you?" Yeah, sure, you know. So we go over and we found our place in the shed where nobody else was at the time. And he proceeded to tell me, and I had known about his family situation, that his father was not totally welcome in his home. A little abusive, it was a little tough for Alex to live there, and so he was tore up the year before, having a great time at camp, but still knowing that there's trouble at home. Well, this year, he had come, and he said, "Dad left," and he said, "Man, it was good." I thought, okay. So, well, I'm glad things have settled down and you're able to be you and enjoy. And he said, "Well, the trouble is he came back. Same old stuff." Only this time, Alex had grown up just a bit and developed a sense of ownership in his house. It was him and his brother and his mom. I don't know who else, if there were sisters or whatever, but he said, I'm not doing so good. He says, "Me and Dad have had words, you know, and he's getting on my case." And of course, and he said, I stood up to him this one time and got in his face. And, you know, of course, that was a personal attack. Then it turned between Dad and son. And he said, my faith is rocked. He said, "I can't seem to get my act together." He said, "I go to church and I'm involved in stuff, but I'm just not feeling real good about things." And as he was going on, and he probably went on for a couple of minutes there, and I thought, you know, in counseling, there's times where you just got to let them rip. You know, let them go and get it out. And we refer to it as letting them throw up all over you. You know, it's like, here, you know, soak me down, you know, whatever you got, throw it at me, and let's, because they need that exhaust, that ventilation to get it out. And I was troubled by some of the things that he was, not that he was saying, but that the lame advice that he was getting. You know, it's like, "Oh, come on, you know, you got to man up. You know, you're a young man now. You better man up. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get your act together, because life's hard. You know, it's going to throw a lot of curves at you, and you better just learn to buckle up and ride this one out." Or how about, and maybe you've heard this before, you really need to just get more involved in church. And you just have to have faith, because God's going to work it out. Well, tell me that while I'm, you know, don't tell me that while I'm going through this finger pointing in my face from my father, whom I'm supposed to trust and respect, and somehow I'm supposed to look up to this man. Well, he's been nothing but a stinking disappointment. And he's tearing me down at the same time, because I'm trying to be this Christian and he's getting in my face about it. He says, "Who are you to tell me what the way I'm supposed to be acting? You want to be a father? Go try it. Do my job. Come into a house. Raise a family. You try to do, you think you're so great. You think you're such a good Christian. You're going to church every Sunday. Yeah, I know you." Alex is feeling pretty rough. And these Christians are telling him, you just got to pull yourself up. You just got to go to church more. You just got to have faith. And you ever feel like that's not going to cut it. I know there's truth in that, but there's got to be more. Paul, and I related, you know, this is a significant time in my life, and we bought a house 9 years prior to that, and we only lived in it for 3 years, and paid for it for the full nine, and paid for two families to live in there for a while, because they didn't pay the rent, and one family even moved in there, and I had no idea. They were there for a short while, you know, blew the pump up because I drained all the water out of the pipes and everything. And of course, it pumped some water up into the pipes. And then, of course, cold weather sets and it froze and everything was just bursting. Whenever I went down, I thought, well, I better turn the energy back on and everything. And in Kentucky, by the way, this was 7 hours away when we were living in Altoona. And three times I went down to that house and replaced pipes because for some reason there was water in there. They didn't get drained out or whatever. And, you know, I'm under the house, cold weather, miserable. And of course, I'm counting the costs. Every month I'm paying $1,000 worth of mortgage. And I'm starting to see things vile is falling off of my teeth as I think about this house and talk about it. Because that thing cost me thousands of dollars, and I wondered why, and I wondered how many times did I go out in the backyard and was I punching the wind because I was so angry at God. It's like, why do you give us this burden and this weight? And do you ever feel powerless over something? Have you ever experienced some kind of powerlessness? And then truth says, there's power in weakness. Do you understand? Do you understand that? It was really ironic. Whenever we left Altoona, I sometimes say we were fired. Pam doesn't like that, but nonetheless, the elders in Altoona said the ministry, we weren't going to fund the ministry anymore, and so it was that month that somebody came and bought that house, that stupid house. And I think after 6 years, you're going to make me pay for this place for six? And, you know, for the money we were making, we weren't. I was working all the time trying to supplement that mortgage. It was terrible. It was hateful. I still trying to figure out what God was doing there, because I know all things work out to the good for those who love Him. And so I'm listening to all these truths and all these principles and all these things that are supposed to make me feel, count it joy in all these trials and persecutions. I struggle with this, some of these things at times. And then I read this, there's power in weakness. Paul, I think, had an idea. And I don't know what your perception of Paul is. You know, if he was tall, short, rough, soft. Whatever image you have in his, confident for sure, and certainly educated, be able to do what he did, motivated to say, ha, I'm going to Asia, you know, and start walking and get on ships and just start doing all the things that he did and involve himself in so many congregations. But in Corinth, there was some junk going on there. Some false teachers got in there. And they said, and Paul had helped establish that congregation, and they said, you know, I don't think Paul's all that great. I don't think he's everything that he's cracked up to be. You know, they were starting to question his authority as an apostle and his image as everything that the Corinthians were saying. Well, Paul was wonderful. You know, he taught us so many things. And this time, he's writing back to those Corinthians because word's getting out to him somehow. And he says, by the humility and gentleness of Christ, I appeal to you, I, Paul, and I think he may have been a little sarcastic here, who am timid when face to face, because apparently you don't have the guts to say it, you know, to me, my face, what I need to hear. with you, but bold toward you went away. Like, oh, you can say all that stuff behind our backs and when you're a million miles away, but come here and say that. Well, Paul's getting ready to. Yeah. He says, I beg that when I come, I may not have to be as bold as I expect to be toward some of you. It's be toward some people who think that we live by the standards of this world. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. So don't expect me to put the gloves on and climb in a ring with you. Don't expect me to get my sword off out of my sheath and come down there and, you know, and start clanging the steel together. On the contrary, these weapons that we do have, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. You know what a stronghold is? You've probably heard about footholds and strongholds. And I think, you know, foothold, I kind of relate to the idea that whenever the salesman is at the door and you try to close the door and he sticks his foot between the jamb and he's thinking, I got a foothold. I got a crack. I can wiggle my way in here now. But if he's got a stronghold, he's done got the door and he stepped into your house. And he says, I got control of this place. This divine power can demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And this one, I think maybe I've mentioned it before, but I hang my hat on this one because I'm all the time trying to figure this one out and trying to live by it. We take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. How many thoughts do you think Paul was having while he's having this discussion in his head and putting it down on paper? I'm going to tell you something, you know, and I think maybe there's a lot of thoughts, and I'm thinking he's backing up a little bit and think, no, I don't want to say that one yet. Okay, and I come over here and it's, yeah, I'm going to nail him to the wall with this one. He makes those thoughts obedient to Christ. He submits the deepest and darkest emotions, whatever is inside, he presents that to Christ, measures it up against what Christ would say. Can you do that? a little tough, because those thoughts, boy, they come rumbling in sometimes, and they ain't so pretty. Take those thoughts and make them obedient to Christ, and we will be ready to punish every act of disobedience once your obedience is complete. Jesus gives us a contrast there. He says, you know, the thief comes. You know who the thief is, right? So he comes to steal and kill and destroy. I like to think that maybe that he's stealing your joy for sure, because you don't want to have joy here, according to the thief. I think he wants to kill your heart, because if you have any desire at all to work with people and sympathize and help people, he's going to kill that. And he wants to destroy your life, whether it be physical. I think he wanted to when he asked God, okay, who can I have here? And God says, have you considered Job? Do whatever. Go ahead. Just don't kill him. The thief wants to, because as long as you're here, you're going to have the opportunity to have some effect on somebody for the good. He wants to eliminate all possibilities of that. But Jesus puts it in contrast. He says, I'm here that they may have life and have it to the full. Do you know what that's like? Full, abundant life? I'm working on that too. I think it's possible. I think there's some kind of understanding that there is life abundant out there. And yet I keep struggling with all these things because Satan is a formidable foe and he's out there trying to get you. 2 Corinthians, just a couple verses down. from that passage, Paul is boasting a little bit, and he starts talking about the things that he's boasting about, and how we, he just talked about those people that are trying to tear things up. He says, let me clarify here. We don't dare classify or compare ourselves with some who commend themselves. I think maybe those false teachers were commending themselves for their abilities and selling people on the things that they were able to produce and sell them. He says, when they measure themselves by themselves and they compare themselves with themselves, not wise. I hear idiots. My vocabulary would be more something like, they're better than not wise. They're just plumb idiots. Do you ever catch yourself comparing yourselves to other people? It's not wise. I did it again. Because I look at those people and I see those guys they're rocking the retreats and they're preaching for 40 years and just numbers are flooding the congregation and filling up the buildings. And I think, those guys, that's the one, I'm not him. Tim, you're not being wise. You're comparing yourself with somebody that you're not. We, however, will not boast beyond proper limits, but will confine our boasting to the sphere of service God Himself has assigned to us, a sphere that also includes you. Do you know that you were assigned to a certain field or sphere that God would have chosen you to be where you are today for a reason? This word, the Greek word for that he's using here for sphere, in your translation it might say field. It could be used as the word lane, like you've been assigned to a lane to run this race in. And Paul suggests here that you have been assigned. So I like to look at it as wherever God has you today, God has you there for a reason. Kind of gives me a sense of purpose to the idea of being where I am. And Pam and I yesterday, we were like trying to figure this out because this is difficult when you look at the surroundings and the things that are going on around you. So, it kind of brings to light the idea of as long as it is today, don't worry about tomorrow. There's enough trouble of its own. Just all these concepts about stay here. Work here. Today is the day that you've been given. Lebanon is the place that you've been placed. The Lebanon Valley Church of Christ is where you have been placed to join, to be a part of this member, this flock. Work here. Look for God here in where He has you, because you have been assigned a certain field, a certain lane, a sphere of service. I like that a lot too. Couple verses later, but let the one who boasts boast in the Lord, for it is not the one who commends himself who is approved, but the one whom the Lord commends. We measure ourselves against others, and we try so hard to please to meet their expectations. To please them. They might be significant people, like our bosses, our fathers, even our mothers, and all those. I think Alex was struggling with this idea, because he really, when our dads come into the room, when I think of my dad, it's been several years since he's been gone. And now I'm 51, soon to be 52, and I think of all times now is when I need them, because I'm screwing this all up. I need some wisdom. I would really like a healthier perspective sometimes. But it's not his expectations that I'm needing to meet. I wish that he would tell me, this is what I want for you, son. But it's not His way that I need to be trying to meet. It needs to be His way. And I need to look at the field that He has assigned me to. And I need to get to know that Father so well that I understand what His will is for me. And I'm told in Romans 12 too that you can know the will. You can know His perfect and pleasing will if you would just transform yourselves by the renewing of your mind. And didn't intend to go there, so this is kind of free. You don't have to pay for this one. If you go back there, it starts that verse, that passage, that message starts out with the idea that you're conforming to the patterns of the world. Commending ourselves, comparing ourselves by ourselves, looking to other people for who I think I need to be. It's not wise. Think differently. Transform yourself by the renewing of your mind. And you can know, Harold. You can know what God's will is. You can know that. Why? It's right there in black and white. Why do I have so much difficulty understanding this when life comes again and again? A little later in Paul's letter, he's describing some struggles of his own. And he says, I understand. And he said, sometimes I think maybe in my mind I hear Paul saying, I don't get it either. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But He said, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Oh, there it is again. Therefore, I'll boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That's why, for Christ's sake, and I don't think he's using God's name in vain there. I really believe for the sake of Christ, I'm going to delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions. Would you just stop already, Paul? In difficulties, you know, you have anything else you want to add to the list? Just beat me down. Beat me while I'm down. But then he says, for when I am weak, then I am strong. I don't feel so strong right about now. I feel worn out. I feel way too heavily challenged. I feel like I am powerless over my life. I don't have control, it seems, of anything. Because kind of the stinking thing is I learned to submit my control over to the power of God and let Him do what He will with my life. And now I don't like it. Because this isn't what I planned. But there's power in weakness, and it's there. And is it my perspective? Was the house not selling for 6 years? You know, after we moved out, was my perspective? I kept struggling with this. It's just my perspective because we can count it all joy. And Alex, son, can you count? I sold him on this, and it helped. And I think I don't know how it happened. And if you go to the next one. I'm not ready for that yet. But Alex, I asked. I said, after his 10 or 15 minutes of throwing up, if you will. I said, Alex, who are you focused on? Oh, Dad was the center of the target. He was the bullseye. And he was throwing all his darts at that man. Who are you not focused on? You kind of see him slouch a little bit. God. How much power have you given your father? A lot. And I kind of suggested that you have a choice. who's going to have the power here? It's either going to be your dad, who is tearing you up from the floor up, or it's going to be God, who will take your life and make it worthy. Tough perspective to develop. Alex loves me. I'm happy to say that, you know, come Father's Day, I got more compliments from all these other kids that are strewn out across the country than I love my girls, but you know, they were kind of late in getting there. I think we just do that as kids. You know, we assume that our moms and dads are there, and that's cool, and they're great. But it's really special when you get a note from Andrew and from Alex and from Derek, and you know, I know you're not my real dad, but you've been there. And I think, you know, that's really cool. I have learned through people a lot smarter than me that know a bunch about psychology and all those things, how people's minds work. But I find this to be true, and I approve this message. Every event in your life is significant. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. But you know that your actions are directly related to your beliefs. So whatever beliefs that you have, when an event occurs, you're going to react out of that belief. I find this to be true because the way it goes is an event happens and your belief system is engaged. You develop thoughts on those beliefs and you measure those thoughts. You have feelings about those thoughts and you act on them. Your emotions are stirred up and your actions, and this is nanoseconds, your actions directly reveal what your beliefs are. You remember 9/11? Those people. Whenever you see one on the street, I know those. I know that person. They are easily identified. Your actions will display what your beliefs are about those people. And it doesn't have to be those people, or a different religion. It could be race. It could be class of people, classifications of people. Oh, yeah, we know the jokes between West Virginia and Pennsylvania, don't we? Those guys, they don't have any teeth. You know, you go to, the joke was, what has six eyes, six legs, and six eyes, but only two teeth? It was the staff at Waffle House in West Virginia. So, I don't promote these kind of jokes, but I thought, that's funny right there. I don't care who you are. So, Texas and Oklahoma, it's the same thing. You're just now getting it. You got it. But they're those people. We see those people, and it's like, I know them. And in churches, we know those ones that come into the back and they sit by themselves and they come in and say, I need help. It's like, oh, I know you. We've given money to you. Not maybe you specifically before, but we've given money to you. And I saw you the next day blowing it all out on drugs and McDonald's hamburgers and smoking cigarettes and drinking and doing whatever. Like, your mother wasn't dying. You didn't really need a bus ticket to Florida to go to your grandmother's funeral. You didn't need all that. I don't care. You aren't from California and you don't have any family there. I know you. At least that's my belief. And my actions will display my beliefs. Are your actions always righteous? Does that maybe put into question our belief system? We have to believe something differently. And we act out of those beliefs. And we believe that we have to be a certain way. We have to be successful. In order to be successful, we have to show that by two cars in the garage and a decent house by the time you're 50 with a mortgage partially paid off and your kids paid for their education and their school and you've got a retirement set up. I got none of it. And this isn't what I expected. And I'm concerned for myself as to why I don't have these things. And I look at different people, and I say, why don't I have what they have? They look like they're set up, and they're talking about retirement. Are you more concerned about your character with God or your reputation with man? I don't meet my dad's expectations. I don't meet my boss's expectations. I don't meet a lot of people's expectations, and I could feel like a failure for that. But I believe I'm working on it and constantly striving to be pleasing to the one who matters. My character with God is what's important. My reputation with man, not so much. Still struggling with that, still working on it. And the next... His power is made perfect in your weakness. I wish I could give you a definitive answer what this looks like in every situation. In Sunday school class, we talked about it a little bit. And I think maybe the reason might be right there when Jesus said, I'm not going to go back to the tomb yet because Lazarus is only sick. And he said, this isn't going to end in death. Now, he knows and he spoke truth. But Lazarus died. Oh, and he said, we're going to wait for a couple of days. And then he told, and he was afar off. And you said it was like maybe a day's travel. And he was far enough away to where he told the guys, okay, it's time to go. And they said, well, what do you mean? You don't want to go back there, do you? And they tried to stone you the last time you were there. And he says, Lazarus is dead. He's asleep, is what he said. And they said, well, if he's just sleeping, what's the big deal? No, he's dead. We got to go back there and fulfill what I just said about glorifying God, the Father. And so when he went back there, he, of course, you know the story, Lazarus was stinking dead. And Jesus said, roll that stone away. And he pointed, called out Lazarus and said, you get out of here. You come out of there right now. Because you will live. And the power in an amazing amount of weakness. Everybody was in a very helpless state. It's like, Jesus, what are you doing? He's dead. He stinks. He's gone. Forget about it. He knew, even before he left, that Lazarus was dead. And when I get there, I'm going to show you some glory. I'm going to show you some power. That power, whew. Ephesians 1, I heard a preacher on the way up here this morning on the car radio talking about that power. I love Ephesians the 1 and 3 and talking about that incredible amount of power. That's availed to you, to me, to anyone who believes and calls on His name and follows through with becoming a child of God. It's for you. In John 15, he refers to these sheep, they know my voice. I'm the shepherd. I'm the chief shepherd. They know my voice. Do you know His voice? He calls a bunch of dumb animals. A bunch of weak. You ever see a sheep after it was shaved? It's kind of stringy looking. You know, not something that you would expect to show resemble power. My power is made complete in your weakness. Where are you at with that? Well, he starts. I know where it starts. Submitting your life to him and giving your life over to his. Seeking his will in all things. Seeking his power. Knowing where the glory belongs. Not comparing yourselves and commending yourselves by yourselves and comparing yourselves with others that are on this level. What's your character with God like? Seek that out and see where he takes you. Like I said, I wish I had more definitive and more specific answers to give, but there's something to this. And if we continue to seek it out daily and we continue to pray and develop that relationship, we're told that we can be watchful and thankful for everything if we devote ourselves to prayer and thanksgiving. It's cool stuff. And it happens. It does. I can attest to that. But I can attest to the human part of me that fails and falls short of the glory of God. I don't ever like to use that verse without bringing up the one right after that. It's because of his grace that you are saved. I don't want to ever leave anybody beat up with the idea that you fall short of the glory of God. Everybody does it. It's like, oh yeah. Oh, but don't forget the second part of that. By grace, you are saved. Saved from what? And I think, Dave, you asked this morning, you know, have you ever experienced loss? Things to grieve? Have you ever experienced, in my mind, I was thinking, ever experienced salvation? It's tough when you grow up in the church and you don't realize what you were saved from. My wife asked me that question one time, and I thought, I don't know. Sin? I thought, boy, that was lame. Because I was at that time meeting people who were saved. Oh, they were saved. They were drowning, and Jesus stretched down into the depths of the sea and drug them out. And they know that they are saved, and they gave him the glory. Can you understand where you were before you were baptized? Can you understand where you are when you fail and fall short? Understanding that is incredible. And for Alex, I don't know what happened, but he went on. He's in college. He's doing wonderful things, and he's staying faithful. And I am so proud of that boy. And the other young men are moving on and have graduated. They're missionaries. Think, man, somewhere along the line, you know, they got the right message. And I'm so happy for that. But hopefully I've made a little bit of effect, influence, at least with that stumbling block. And we need to be there for those. Let them rip sometimes, but remind them who God is. And remind ourselves who God is and understand where he has us assigned. I'll stop there. There's probably a whole bunch more. I gave this sermon one time. It was 45 minutes long. I think you're probably saying it's time to go. So yeah, I cut a lot of stuff out because it was near and dear to my heart at that time. Boy, it was cranking. But I think we have the opportunity now when we stand up and sing to allow your weakness to be known if you would like that, because there's an incredible amount of power in this church according to Ephesians 1, and that power raised the dead. That's an incredible amount of power, and it's available to you right now. And if you want us to all pray together, we can do that. And I don't know where you're at in your idea of salvation, but we can talk about that as well. Let's stand and sing.